For those of you who are visiting, this summer we're doing a series of sermons on different psalms chosen by the congregation. And I'm not surprised that someone wanted Psalm 46, which we read today. There's a little surprise for next Sunday's psalm. Psalm 137 will be next Sunday. It's tougher. It's the one that starts out by the rivers of Babylon. There we sat down and there we wept. And concludes, happy shall they be who take your little ones and dash them against the rock. That's a tougher one. We like to think of ourselves as tough and resilient. If you want to compliment someone, you don't call them fragile. You call them tough or reliable or resilient or hard-nosed, but not fragile. We walk the walk and talk the talk. We're sturdy, rugged, red-blooded, hearty, and hale. We like to live by the phrase, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. After all, we do make it through New England winters every year. We grin and bear it. We're thick-skinned and hard-nosed. Fragile is for the frail, not for the strong. If we could rewrite this psalm, we might say, we are our own refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. And nothing in our culture discourages us from this. We are taught from our earliest days to be self-reliant. We are pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, stand up and be counted sort of folk. That's us. And it works, except when it doesn't work. We all know that there are times when even the toughest among us has a fragile side. Have you been struck, as I have, by how much of the tragic news recently has involved children? From the tragedy in Newtown up till now, when thousands of children are crossing the Rio Grande to enter the U.S. illegally, a child dying in a hot car in Georgia, and perhaps most dangerous, three Israeli children kidnapped and burned to death, followed by a Palestinian teenager kidnapped and brutally murdered in revenge, and now no one seems able or willing to stop the cycle of violence in the Holy Land. It's a scary time. Few things make us feel more fragile than when a child dies, especially when a child is murdered. One of the stories of the past week that has not been widely publicized is that Mr. Nir, N-I-R, Barakat, the mayor of Jerusalem, arranged for one of the families in Israel who lost a son to have a telephone conversation with the parents of the Palestinian boy who was murdered in revenge. He described it as an emotional and special telephone conversation between two families who have lost their sons. Both families were equally fragile in their grief, and both expressed deep sympathy and well wishes for the other. Both of these families were desperate for what the writer of Psalm 46 called a very present help in trouble. It's almost like the writer of this psalm anticipated just such a cataclysmic experience, and he described it in the most extreme ways he could possibly do it. Though the earth should change, though the mountains shake in the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult. Now, to understand how radical this was, we have to remember that this writer, whoever it was, believed, along with the rest of his culture, that the earth was flat. And when he looked out at the ocean, he wondered, what keeps the land that I'm on from sinking down into the ocean? And the cultural answer to that was that down in the ocean there were mountains holding up the land that you're standing on. Then he looked at the sky. And along with the rest of his culture, he thought the sky was solid, a blue dome. That's why it was called a firmament. They thought it was firm. And they asked themselves, what holds up the firmament? And the answer, there must be some mountains somewhere holding up the sky. So what he is describing here is the very foundations of the earth shaking and trembling. For him, he was literally describing the sky falling. Is that not like what we feel when certain things happen to us? Someone we love dies, or we lose a job, or we experience betrayal and our faith is shaken. Everything that seemed solid and permanent seems to be shaking and trembling, to use the words of Martin Luther in his famous hymn, A Mighty Fortress, which we'll sing at the end of the service. Some things threaten to undo us. This psalm is describing a time when, for the writer of the psalm, the world was falling apart. But then it gets even worse. Not only does this psalm describe a cosmic shaking, a cosmic tragedy, but also a political tragedy. The nations are in an uproar. The kingdoms totter, he said. All that they thought was nailed down is coming loose. It's in the midst of that kind of insecurity that we hear this astonishing, stunning affirmation, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. And that phrase, the Lord of hosts is with us, is absolutely central to this psalm. The Lord of hosts is with us. And central to that refrain is one Hebrew word translated with us. That word in the Hebrew is Immanu. I-M-M-A-N-U. Immanu. The Lord of hosts is Immanu, with us. Now I'd like for you to skip ahead to the story of a young woman named Mary, who years later was experiencing her own crisis. She found herself unmarried and pregnant in a culture where the woman was always considered guilty in such a circumstance and was subject to stoning. Her world was shaken in the heart of her seed. Everything seemed to be falling apart. If anyone was having a fragile moment, it would have been Mary at that moment. But the story says that an angel appeared to her, and the first thing the angel said was, "Greetings, favored one. The Lord is with you." There's that word again, except now it's second person singular, Immanuel. With you. And another gospel at the same time describes a dream that Joseph had and says that he should not be afraid because Mary is pregnant. The child to be born would be called Immanuel, with us God. The same word that is in Psalm 46 is the word that makes up the name of Jesus. Immanuel. Then skip over to the end of the story of Jesus in the Gospels. The very last words that Jesus says to his disciples are these: "I am with you always, even to the end of the world." Does the name Derek Redmond mean anything to you? Derek Redmond was an Olympic sprinter running for Great Britain. In 1985, he broke the British record for the 400-meter sprint. He ran it in 44.82 seconds. Now, I want to point out that 400 meters is exactly 437.445 yards. That is a complete circuit of the track around a football field. And they have the audacity to call that a sprint. I call it a long-distance run. Holding the British record, Derek Redmond began training for the 1988 Olympic Games in Seoul, South Korea. He trained in preparation for those Olympic Games for 3 years. And when he finally ran in the Seoul Olympics, he heard an awful tear in his right leg, and he fell to the track. It was a torn right Achilles tendon, and he had to withdraw from the Olympic Games and face surgery. He almost gave up, but instead he withstood 8 surgeries and began training for the 1992 Olympic Games to be held in Barcelona, Spain. By the time he reached Barcelona, he was in top shape, good health, peak form. He won the first 2 rounds, hardly breaking a sweat, including posting the fastest time in the first round heats. Then he lined up in the starting blocks to run the semifinals. He felt good, He got off to a good start. But about 250 meters from the finish line, his hamstring snapped. He began hobbling, and he fell to the ground, writhing in pain. Stretcher bearers started running down out of the stands toward him. But Redman decided that he had to finish the race. He managed to get himself up to his feet and start hobbling toward the finish line, mostly hopping on one foot. The huge crowd that had been paying attention to who won suddenly turned their attention to this runner who was determined to reach the finish line. Then something extraordinary happened. A man came bounding down out of the stands, barging past the security guards, out onto the track. The man was Jim Redman, Derek's father, who ran out onto the track, put his arm around his son, and together they completed the race, with Derek leaning on his father's shoulder for support. When they finally crossed the finish line, 65,000 fans stood to their feet to applaud Derek Redman. Dear friends, both old and new, there are times in our life when we are running this race of life, when even the strongest, most well-conditioned among us suddenly feel fragile. We're not guaranteed to reach the finish line without injury, without a limp, without brokenness, without pain. We're not guaranteed to reach the finish line without tears. But we are guaranteed this: the Lord of hosts is with us. He is not sitting up in the stands watching from a distance. The Lord of hosts is with us. And when we fall along the way and feel like our faith is fragile and torn and broken even shattered, someone comes down barging past all the obstacles, puts an arm around us and says, "We will finish this race together." If you ever wonder what holds a congregation like this together, as different as individuals are, it's not surprising. We are diverse in our political views, our theological views, our backgrounds, our race, our education, our personalities, our health, our accents, our incomes, our age. We are as diverse as we possibly can be. But we share at least this one thing in common. We all have a fragile side to us. We come together in our common fragility to admit that life, as the poet Keats said, is but a fragile dewdrop on its perilous way from a tree's summit. In such a journey, we need each other. We need each other. And together, we sometimes fragile folk can at least once a week come together in a holy place such as this and be still and know that God is our refuge a very present help in trouble. And we can know that the God of Jacob is with us.